Welcome to the teaching ministry of Grace Fellowship Church in Bradenton, Florida. We invite you to join our pastor, William Rogers, as he continues his study of prophecy and his verse-by-verse study of the book of the Revelation of Jesus Christ.
Okay, we're in Revelation 17. I've asked Mike to read chapter 17, verses 5 through 8.
Reading from the National New American Standard Bible, and this is with and on her forehead a name was written. Well, let's go back to verse 4. The woman was clothed in purple and scarlet, and adorned with gold and precious stones and pearls, having in her hand a gold cup full of abominations and the unclean things of her immorality. And on her forehead a name was written in mystery, Babylon the Great, the mother of harlots, and of the abominations of the earth. And I saw a woman drunk with the blood of the saints, and with the blood of the witnesses of Jesus. When I saw her, I wondered greatly. And the angel said to me, Why do you wonder? I will tell you the mystery of the woman, and of the beast that carries her, which has the seven heads and the ten horns.
Perfect. Chapter 17 ought to be taken with chapter 13. And when you look at these two together, you come up with a very complex situation in the tribulation period that is confusing. But we began to see how chapter 13 shaped up. And when we got to 13, we realized that chapter 11 really ended, chronologically speaking, the progression or movement through. And then when we got to 12, 13, and 14, these were a look back at the way certain things happened. Chapter 12, for example, was a look at Satan and his being cast out of heaven to the earth. And then chapter 13 is the result of him being cast to earth, his reign on the earth through the Antichrist and that kingdom. And then 14 was a look at the beginning of the judgments that were about to follow. But in looking at 13, when we got to 13, we went through 13, but there were some key things that are in 13 that are not really explained. And if chapter 17 and 18 were not here, it might cause us to remember 13 and ask questions like, well, whatever happened to the Antichrist? Because when we get to the end of 16, we see these seven bowl judgments, and we know that the judgments are severe, and we know that there are what we call the last of the death blows, and yet we see some tremendous destruction on the earth, and without 17 and 18, we would not know where or what happened to the events that were described for us in 13. And the events for us in 13 are twofold. Number one, chapter 13 revealed to us the beginning and the deception and the power of the reign of this one who's called the Antichrist. And also, along with that, this one who is called the false prophet, who comes alongside and demands certain things of the world, and it is a very confusing time. And then it's dropped pretty much until we get to chapter 17 and 18. Chapter 17 and 18 is a look at this segment or this subject called Babylon. In fact, chapter 17, verse 5, we are looking at this woman or this harlot who sits on many waters. And we're seeing the spiritual side of Babylon in chapter 17. Chapter 18, we're going to look at the political implications of the kingdom that we saw beginning in chapter 13. Now, chronologically speaking, and that always is of major concern when you're dealing with Revelation, is people want to know how it falls on that kind of a timeline. Where does the things happen? Well, we know that the tribulation period begins with what? What would you say is one of the first things in the tribulation period that we know of? Okay, it's a false peace. And that is an interesting thing to look at because it certainly doesn't end with peace. And the peace is very short-lived, and it is a time that so much happens in the first 3.5 years that are really not emphasized that you have to just kind of put the pieces of the puzzle together and look back to see that these things must have been happening in the first 3.5 years because the second 3.5 years, some other things are already happening, and the first 3.5 year incidents or events can't happen second. They have to go first. And one of those examples is the religious system. Now, immediately after the tribulation period, we have the beginning of the final form of the world's false religion. But until you get to that final form that begins in the second half of the tribulation period, you have that first half. And in the first half, you have all the religions of the world are coming together. They're not all together yet. And so when you get to the second half of the tribulation period, you see all of these religions coming together. And we describe this as the mother of harlots and of the abominations of the earth. Meaning the mother is the one who produced all of the other false religions. They all have their origin in the Tower of Babel or in Babel or Babylon. And everything produced from that, when the people were scattered, God scattered the people and He scattered their cultic, humanistic ways. And so they left and scattered, and all that scattered throughout all of the earth. And so we look back at that and we think that, well, how does it actually go into the tribulation period? And how do we get from the beginning of the tribulation period, where you are beginning to have a one world government, you don't have it yet, but things are moving that direction. And then how does it end up in the final form of the world's false religion in the last 3.5 years? In other words, how does it get to the form of Babylon the Great, the mother of harlots and of the abominations of the earth? How do we get to chapter 17 where the one religion is described as one woman, the mother of all harlots? And it is a very interesting thing to look at. And we began laying this out last week by following up on the week before, which was laying out the desire of man to actually worship something. Not the true God, but the false gods. And Satan is pretty willing to accommodate them and to provide opportunities to worship whatever is at their heart's desire to worship. And that's where you have false religions coming in. And it's a fascinating thing to look at. All of the false religions basically are all the same. They are all instigated by Satan himself. And he has different little things about each one, but yet they're all pretty much the same because they all stand as the originator of these, the instigator of these, and the purpose of these is to distance people from the truth of the Word of God. To be a contrast to truth. To be opposite of truth. Different from the truth. And that's what false religion is. And yet we see this coming together in the tribulation period. You see that from the rapture to midway. Now what happens at midway that causes a disturbance or a disruption of the world's religious system? Judy? Okay, he does. Look over at 2 Thessalonians chapter 2. We've been there several times. And I think it's worth reminding you of what's going on so that we can begin to focus on this, these characters in chapter 17. Because if you don't understand coming into 17 some of these things, 17 can be very, very confusing. 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, it says in verse 3, "Let no one in any way deceive you, for it, the day of the Lord, will not come unless the apostasy comes first," that great falling away, "and the man of lawlessness," another way of saying the Antichrist, "is revealed, the son of destruction." Now, we've looked at this. The Antichrist being revealed does not mean he's revealed to the earth as the Antichrist. And I have actually seen that in print. And that's not what this is saying. The Antichrist is revealed, and he's going to tell us how he's revealed in verse 4. Look at verse 4. "This son of destruction, who opposes and exalts himself above every so-called God or object of worship." Now, there's a lot of so-called gods. There's a lot of objects of worship, all beginning to take shape in the tribulation period. And he has been tolerant of them. He has cooperated with them. He has agreed with them and been a part of them, except for the middle part of the tribulation. It all stops. Now look at how it stops. He exalts himself above every so-called God or object of worship, so that he takes his seat in the temple of God, displaying himself as being what? As being God. So, what will the world think he is? God. And the world is going to have to worship him. Now, at this point, it's only Jewish. It is only to the Jews, because he takes his seat in their temple of worship. This is called the abomination of desolation, spoken of by Daniel the prophet, Matthew chapter 24, Luke chapter 13, Mark chapter 12, Luke 18, Luke 13, and Daniel chapter 3 and 7. And so you look at this in 9. And you look at this and you think, well, he moves from this abomination of desolation from the temple in Jerusalem to outside the temple, to moving to the world. And he is at this point not accepting the world religions. They are to cease. They are to stop. No more will he tolerate them. It's over. And so you look at this in chapter, go back to chapter 17, and you look over in, let's see, where might it be? Verse 16. Mike, will you read verse 16?
"And the 10 horns which you saw, and the beast, these will hate the harlot, and will make her desolate and naked, and will eat her flesh, and will burn her up with fire."
The world religions are stopped at that point. The point of the abomination of desolation. It will then move to a one-world religious system. It will then move into the final form of the religious system. The world will have become more and more religious at this point. In fact, they are going to be consumed with religion at this point. They're going to be drunk with religion at this point. And at this point is what we find in chapter 13. Go to Revelation chapter 13, holding your hand on 2 Thessalonians. In Revelation chapter 13, this Antichrist is the major subject of verses 1 through 10. We see His coming on to take power. We see His fake resurrection, His death and resurrection. And then we see, verse 11, this another beast coming up out of the earth in Revelation 13, 11. And He had two horns like a lamb, and He spoke as a dragon. Now, He's very gentle. He's very receivable. He's very much going to be received by the people of the world. And the world religion is changing at this point. His job is to bring all of the religions together to form a new religion. And when I read commentaries that have titles like The Woman Who Rides the Beast or other books that are written, and they talk about the Catholic Church, they're missing the point. The Catholic Church is in part control of the first 3.5 years, but the second 3.5 years, there is no more Catholic Church. It's gone. It has stopped. The one world religion is what? It is worship of the Antichrist. In order to bring all of these together, they have to lead them, direct them, and force them into exactly what they are to worship. The object of their worship is going to change. The focus, the adoration, and the praise, and the bowing down is going to change from whatever they had to, look at chapter 13, verse 11. Chapter 13, verse 11, had two horns like a lamb, and He spake as a dragon, and He exercises all the authority of the first beast in His presence, and He makes the whole earth and those who dwell in it to what?
To worship
the beast. The object of worship has changed to the beast. Now that's what we're seeing in chapter 17. We are seeing this setting of, take chapter 13, verse 11, and you go to the end of the chapter and you begin to see how He does that with false signs and wonders. And He even demands that the world has a number of the beast to keep up with them, to track them, to provide a way for economic trade, for food and water and perhaps shelter. And yet, it stops. What happens to that? Does it just continue? Where does it go? What happens when all of the severe judgments take place? And is there an actual end to this false religion? And that's what chapter 17 does. It provides for us a conclusion to chapter 13. And to me, when you begin to see that, and you sometimes can read, in fact, I challenge you to do that this week, is to read chapter 13 and then read 17. And you see the conclusion, or you see the ending of how it comes to a close. And it is absolutely incredible, because the one thing you don't really see in 13 is, when you look at 13 and then you look at verse 12, what do you think you see in verse 12? In fact, what is verse 12 telling us? Basically, simply put, the world is going to worship. This false prophet is going to make the earth. So the question would be, if we were doing observations, can he, the false prophet, accomplish this? It doesn't say he does, but it says he makes them. Well, can he make them? Can he have that? I'm not asking a question. I'm asking you, this is what you would do if you were doing an observation study. You would have to ask the text that question. And so you don't really know whether that is accomplished or not. But when you get to 17, it's like suddenly you realize just how big this really is. Just how massive it is. Now think about getting all people in one religion to agree on one subject. Think you could do that? I was asked to preach at a church as a pulpit supply. I did a lot of that when I was in Mobile, coming away from Atlanta and teaching at the University of Mobile there. And I was asked to speak in a country church, and I would go there. And if these little country churches, all Baptist churches, you drive forever and where you think you're at the end of the earth, there's nobody going to live back here. And then all of a sudden you go around the curve and boom, there's this massive church. It's like, wow. It actually, they have a church out here. And so you pull in there and sure enough, it's packed on Sunday morning. And I went in this one and I began to talk to the people and I found out that, boy, it sure seemed cold in there. That's not air conditioner cold. That is cold. People weren't talking to one another. So finally the deacons got me together before I was to preach. And they said, we have a little problem right now. I said, well, don't most Baptist churches have little problems right now? And he said, well, no, probably not like this one. He said, the people are mad. We're going to replace the carpet. I said, oh, no, don't tell me. Don't even tell me that you can't decide the color between red or blue. He looked at me, he went, somebody's already told you. They were debating on the carpet, and you had half the church wanted red, and half the church wanted blue. So I thought, here we go. But you look at this, and you look at what is happening this week in New Orleans with the Southern Baptist Convention, and I'm not going to say too much because somebody might send this to somebody. But here they can't even agree that you've got two camps in the Southern Baptist religion, Southern Baptist Convention, all the Southern Baptist churches. You've got the conservatives and you've got the liberals. But within the conservatives and even a few of the liberals, you've got another camp developing. It is the camp that is teaching the doctrines of grace. Where the conservatives now have two camps. Those who don't hold to the doctrines of grace and those that do hold to it. And they can't decide what to do, whether to rewrite their statement of faith, you know, the we believe doctrinal statement. They're going to have to rewrite it, but who writes it? Now, do the liberals have any say in it, or does those that hold to a Calvinistic approach have anything to do with it, or what about those who are more of the Arminius persuasion? Are they going to have input? Well, they're all Southern Baptists, and according to the Southern Baptists, they all have to have input. I can't wait to read that thing. So, I look at that, and of course I read today, just sitting there thinking through, I've been living in Babylon now for 3 weeks, reading this Revelation 13 and then Revelation 17, thinking, you know, really, 13, you don't get the real picture. Even in the verse it says, He makes the earth and all who dwell in it to worship one man. That's incredible. What I believe 17 is telling us is that this is a supernatural event. This is something beyond anything the world has ever seen. This woman who rides, this harlot who rides the beast before the tribulation period. I mean, before the abomination of desolation is hated later. And it becomes a one world religion so that he is in opposition to all of these religions, so much so they have to worship him. Man, he has taken center stage. And this is a monster event. This is bigger than you would have ever imagined. And it is supernatural in nature because it is being led by Satan himself. And it's big. It's big. So when we look at chapter 13, verses verse 12, and it says, and He makes the earth. He literally, you got to remember now, He's making the earth. He's making all the false religions change who they are. Have you ever tried to change someone in a false religion?
Yeah, it's like impossible.
It just doesn't happen. And so you're going to change all your Jehovah Witnesses, all your Mormons, all your Catholics, all the other, all your Buddhists, your Mohammedism, your all of these things.
Muslims.
What?
All the Muslims.
All the
Muslims. Islam.
Yep. No, they probably won't be included. All of them.
Including them.
Astrologers. Scientists. Every one of them.
Scientology.
All of this. You are coming in, and this false prophet is going to make them all change who they are. Yes, ma'am.
Now, the Antichrist is a man. Is false prophet is Satan? Is he appearing as a man?
Yes.
Okay.
They both will be. You see, that's a good question. Because what we see is the heaven view of what's happening. We see God's perspective, right? Because this is what John's writing. He's in heaven seeing this. But what does the earth see? They see a man. They see a man who is going to die and come back to life. They see a man who is going to experience something supernatural in nature. And it's called a resurrection. A fatal wound. And he comes back to life. Let me show you how that reads in chapter 17. In chapter 17, we looked at verse 5 and we began to get into verse 6 in just generalities, not really getting into the detail. But look at verse 7. And the angel said to me, this is the angel that brought him the message, and he says to me, this is John, why do you wonder? Because John is wondering. He is saying, why do you wonder? I shall tell you the mystery of the woman and of the beast that carries her. Now, he's not going to explain to him the mystery of the religion, but the mystery as far as the beast carrying the woman. And that's an interesting thing to look at. Because he is saying, I'm going to explain this to you. And he says, this beast that carries her, the woman, the harlot, which has 7 heads and 10 horns. Who has 7 heads and 10 horns? The beast does. So when we looked at beast, and we looked at this when we got into 13, beginning in verse 1, and we went to verse 4, and I said to you that the beast represents the Antichrist as a person and as a political nation or a kingdom. It represents two in one. So when you look at the beast, you're seeing the kingdom for sure, but you're also seeing a man. And so you have this, and he is going to show them. But look at what verse 8 says. This is how verse 8, this angel is describing to John about the Antichrist and what is going to happen to cause John to wonder at this, but it caused the world is wondering at this. Look at verse 8. The beast that you saw. Now we know the beast. It's the same beast that chapter 13 talks about. It's the same one, the Antichrist, that you saw was, and look at this, and is not, for he died, and then he is again. And his is again, notice the phraseology here, and is, really there is a break there. And then it picks up, about to come up out of the abyss and to go to destruction. In other words, this Antichrist being led of Satan does not realize that his coming back is a direct path straight to the abyss for destruction. So John is confused at this. He's wondering about this. How can this one who is so powerful be resurrected? He is, then he is not, and then he is again, but he's on the way to being destroyed. You see how that reads? Because look at what it says in the end of things. And those who dwell upon the earth, look at this, will wonder. They're confused. Will wonder. Who will wonder? Who are the people wondering? Who are the people deceived into believing who this is? Well, it tells us. Whose names have not been written in the book of life from the moment of their salvation.
No, from the foundation.
Judy, did I read that wrong?
Yes, you did.
How does yours read that?
Mine says from the foundation of the world.
Now, what does foundation of the world mean?
The beginning.
Before Genesis 1:1.
Really, we look at the foundation of the world as being anywhere from Genesis 1:1 to Genesis 1:3. It really doesn't matter. But it just makes sense that God had a plan.
Yes.
Now, in that plan, I know this is going to ruffle some feathers. But if you have feathers, some of you are trying to demonstrate that you actually do have feathers, and I am not looking at you. God actually had a plan for man. And he determined before man was put into the garden who was going to be listed in the Lamb's Book of Life. Oh, that can't mean that, William. It can't mean that. Can it?
No.
What would that have to mean? For God to do that, what would that have to mean? How many know? Michelle, tell us what that means.
That God is God. That He was.
Okay, that's very clearly.
In all things.
It simply means this. If these names have not been written in the Lamb's Book of Life from the foundation of the world, then that must mean there are names written in the Lamb's Book of Life.
Yes, hallelujah.
There are some in the book, and there's some not in the book, right? How did those get in the book that are in the book?
God chose them.
And Marty, did you just say a bad word?
You mean chose.
Chose.
I said God chose.
Oh, dear.
Marty said it. Y'all did not hear me say that. Y'all, I'm being facetious now. But let me tell you something. This is part of what the SBC is fighting over. Now, to me, when I read this, it's very clear. God chose people to put them in the book. After all, who else is going to get their name in the book?
Who was around before?
I wasn't there when God created the earth. I said, Lord, listen, I see you. I know you're putting names in the Lamb's Book of Life. I want my name in there. Is that how it worked? But yet, to say that God chose people for the Book of Life offends highly. And it is a Bible doctrine. It's Bible. To say God chose means absolutely to me that God is God and He has a right to do that.
That's right.
Amen.
And my only concern is, thank God, my name is in the Lamb's Book of Life. But this is talking about a group of people whose names are not in there. And guess what? If they're not in there, here's what that means. They will never be in there. They have never been in there. They will never be in there. They are not in there because their names are not in there. Does that make sense? There is no new name in glory. I don't care if there's a song like that. Every one of those people whose names are not in there probably know that song. And they may sing it for eternity. But their name was not new in glory. Their name is not in glory. These people, whose names have not been written in the book of life from the foundation of the world, when they see the beast that he was and is not and will come, wonder. They wonder about this man. And so that's what Revelation 17 is saying about the resurrection of chapter 13. This one that the false prophet says performs great signs so that he makes fire come down from heaven. Now why would fire coming down from heaven persuade anyone?
So he can command lightning?
Why would this persuade anyone that just because he can bring fire from heaven or anything? After all, there's two other guys there. They're called witnesses. They're able to do more than this false prophet. And guess what? They can bring fire from heaven. They can stop it from raining. They can create any kind of a judgment as often as they want on anyone they want to do it. And they're out there. And this false prophet is out there too. So the world has got to pick and choose. Let's see, do I believe these two guys? I think one of them's name is Moses and one's probably Elijah. And this other one over here, I don't know who he is. And there's a lot of confusion going on. But behind the scenes, Satan is bringing all the religion together so that everyone worships the beast. They don't worship the false prophet. They worship the Antichrist and him only. Yes, ma'am?
Isn't it true when he was talking about the two witnesses because they could do all this too? Isn't it true that at the same time he was working to turn everybody against the two witnesses? I mean, because you said they could share all power from heaven. So yeah, they could.
I will guarantee you, Satan has launched an all-out attack to try to kill these two witnesses.
Not to kill them, to turn people against them so they wouldn't listen or believe them.
Well, yeah, that plus kill them.
Yeah.
And he does kill them.
Yeah.
So, but anyway, this is the kind of scene that you have here. And that's why when you get to 17, you've got to explain what this is or people aren't going to know. For example, look at chapter 17. Let me show you something. I got out my observations that I had done on this, and I went through them again. And I've got the characters here. Number one, the harlot. The harlot must be described in verse 1. But also with the harlot, you've got who sits on many waters. Waters is a character. Waters represents people, so you would have to list waters as character. Then you've got the woman sitting on a beast in verse 3. So you have two characters there, possibly, if you're doing observations, is who is the woman, and is this the same person in verse 1 that's called a harlot? Now you've got a new creature. Now instead of sitting on waters, she's riding a beast. And so you look at the beast, and you have to identify the woman and sitting on the beast, and then you have these characteristics that are given pertaining to the woman and to the beast. The beast, blasphemous names, 7 heads, 10 horns, and then he switches back to the woman. This woman was clothed in purple and scarlet and adorned with gold, precious stones, pearls, having in her hand a gold cup full of abominations and of the unclean things of her immorality. And then he even gets into to the name on her forehead describing who this religion is. And then we look at that. Mystery Babylon the Great, the mother of harlots and of abominations of the earth. And then I saw the woman drunk with the blood of saints. So another characteristic about this woman. So it becomes very apparent that when we go through here, we need to identify the harlot, the woman, and then the woman again, and her how she is dressed, what she's wearing, what's her name, why are they drunk with this, in order to begin to establish just how big this final form of the world religion actually is. This final form of the world religion is intoxicating. Look at verse 2. She sits on many waters, and we are described waters very clearly as people, nations, tongues. Look at verse 2. She sits on many waters with whom the kings of the earth committed acts of immorality. Fornication. They have committed acts with her. Who is her? False religion. They have been working as partners with this false religion. They have combined forces, so to speak. And they are working with, look at who it says, the kings of the earth committed acts of immorality with this woman. And so we have the authority of this woman being given to us in this verse as participating with the king or rulers of the earth at that time. And so you look at this, really what this tells us is this woman is powerful. This final form of the world religion is very powerful, even to the rulers of the world. Now, someone asked me a question today on the email, and that was, why is America or the United States not mentioned in prophecy? And I sent back and said, that is a long answer, one of which, you know, I don't want to engage in, but I will give you the short version. Now, for me, a short version is usually yes, no, maybe, see you later, thanks. You know, I don't type much. When I turned on my computer today from the morning, I already had over 200 messages. So it even takes a while to delete that many. Now, when I get home tonight, I'm sure there will be another 50 to 75 more messages. So I try to make things real brief. Because I'm not one to sit at my computer all day. I just don't like, I don't know how you guys do it. I don't tweet. And I don't bark. I don't Facebook. I don't chat. I read. That's what I like to do, is read. And I will answer. But I answered her this way. The United States is not mentioned in prophecy because many countries and continents and places and cities are not mentioned in prophecy. Why is that true? You ever thought about that? Why would you think that's true? Anybody have an idea?
That was the only known world that they knew.
No. Nope. See, John is writing of the future world. Plus,
I think it has a lot to do with the direct involvement of Israel. Direct involvement with Israel.
Okay, anybody else?
Does it have to do with the fact that a third of the world has been destroyed already?
That may play part of it.
I have to say, because probably inconsequential. The United States is never a major player at this point in the relationship.
It's very inconsequential. And that even in itself is only part of the answer. The other part of the answer is the nations of the world have been joined together with a one world political economic system known as the Satan or the kingdom of Satan. The false kingdom. And they're meshed together. And that's what we see in chapter 18. We see the one world political system known as Babylon going down. Is that a literal city? Yes. Is it also a system? Yes. Is it also a religion? Yes. But that's what you're looking at when you look at 17 and 18. In 17, you're looking at the religious side of it. In 18, you're looking at the political economic side of it. All the same thing. And so it becomes a very intricate kind of a system to look at. And there's really no need to mention America because it's not a major powerhouse. At that time. Yes?
I've got a question. When it says, and I saw the woman drunken with the blood of the saints and the blood of the martyrs, could that be talking about the crusades of all the Christians?
It's talking about all from the past.
From all, any part.
From all false religions have always sought to wipe out God's people.
But was it in the crusades and many Christians?
Oh, yeah. Killed? Yeah, sure. In fact, you can go to the first century all the way to the 16th century and see that.
All the Christians being killed.
Yeah, absolutely. true born-again Christians. That's what your false religion did. The Catholic Church is known for killing more Christians than any other religion. And so you look at this and you see, wow, this woman, this harlot, is drunk with the blood of the saints and of the blood of the witnesses for Christ. And when I saw her, I wondered. And really, I think what we're seeing here is just how massive this is. This is worldwide religion. Now, how could one man standing in Jerusalem make people in Uganda worship the image of the beast? He's set up through military. They will be military action through the kings of the earth. Look over at verse 13. These kings of the earth, they have one purpose. Look at this. They have one purpose, and they give their power and authority to the beast. They will accomplish whatever that beast wants to accomplish. And it happens. That's how they make it happen. That's how, even in America, America will have to bow its knee to the Antichrist, to the image constructed by the false prophet. We will have to bow the knee in this country to that one world religion. Because America is part of the world. And we tend to think, well, we're different. You know, we're more civilized. We're more prim and proper. We're more technologically advanced. Well, we're going to see how advanced we are bowing down and receiving the mark of the beast so we can eat or so we can have water. You know, that really brings it home when you see, well, America is included in prophecy because all nations of the world are included. When we read 17:1, who sits on many waters, with whom the kings of the earth and the earth committed acts of immorality, and those who dwell on the earth. That's America. America's right there. And no matter what religions are in this country, and there are a lot of them, it's going to all change to worship the Antichrist, which in actuality, according to chapter 13, verse 4 and 5, it is a worship of Satan himself. The one world religion is going to worship Satan with the help of demons. We saw this in chapter 16. How are all these kings of the earth going to come together? Why would they come together in the Valley of Megiddo, or what is called Armageddon? Why would they come? Because of the demonic power given them to entice, seduce, draw these kings of the earth there to fight against God's people. Wow, what an incredible thing. That's how massive this one world religion actually is. So when we look at chapter 17 and we see a harlot, we see kings of the earth, we see earth dwellers, we see a woman riding the beast with blasphemous names, and we see seven heads, we see 10 horns clothed in purple and scarlet, strictly signifying how rich of this world religion it is, how precious are the stones, how wealthy this religious system is. Adorned with gold, precious stones and pearls, and in her hand a gold cup full of abominations. It's amazing. This is worldwide. It affects every single person that name is not written in the Lamb's Book of Life. Now that becomes important to understand because there are people that are in the earth whose names are written in the Lamb's Book of Life. They are not deceived. Right? Matthew 24 says the days are so terrible that if possible the very elect themselves would be deceived. Now, they're not deceived. That passage is not teaching in Matthew 24 that the elect will be deceived. It says they cannot. But the deception is so strong that if it were possible, it could take them too. But they can't. Because God, these are God's people. And you can't mess with God's people. That's interesting. Because they're not going to fall to deception, but they can fall to the sword. Isn't that interesting? So you look at this and you begin to see just how powerful the world system of religion is. And we see in verse 2 that it is so powerful that we see the authority related to with kings and all earth dwellers. And so we're seeing that this woman is being exposed to us by way of revelation so that we can understand the authority she has. The intermingling with all authorities of the world are partners with her. And then it says, He carried me away in the wilderness, or in the spirit, into a wilderness. And I saw a woman sitting on a scarlet beast, full of blasphemous names, having 7 heads and 10 horns. This is the same person. This harlot in verse 1 becomes a woman riding the beast in verse 3. And in a desert place. Doesn't say where the desert is. It just says this desolate place. He sees this. And then he gets into the descriptives. And then verse 7, the angel said to me, "Why do you wonder? Why is that a wonder to you? Why do you stand in amazement?" is really what he's asking. Because, you see, John's already written 13. He already knows what's happening there. Isn't that interesting? That he sees this and he's standing there in wonder and the angel is explaining this to him. And then, but it's so interesting because he says, "I will explain to you the mystery of the woman and of the beast that carries her," but he doesn't get to the woman, he goes straight to the beast. That's what verse 8 is. See how the verse 8 starts off with the beast. But he doesn't go to the woman yet. He goes to the woman a little later. But he's got to deal with the beast because it needs to be clarified that the beast represents all countries, all nations of the world, all rulers of this world are represented by this beast, the kingdom of Satan. Interesting. And boy, you get into this and it almost takes in fact, I laid out mine almost as a diagram just so I could see the woman, the harlot, the beast, the king, 7 horns, 7 kings, 10 horns, many waters, and then there's a destruction, and it can get very confusing. But very simplistically put, as the abomination of desolation in the middle of the tribulation period, all religions stop. They all stop. Whether it's Catholicism, Mormonism, all of them cease to be. And that may help you in your understanding that instead of whatever they were worshiping, even if they don't know what they're worshiping, they will know exactly what they're worshiping. Look at 2 Thessalonians chapter 2 again. I ask you to hold your hand there, and I know many of you dropped it. 2 Thessalonians, just like I did. 2 Thessalonians chapter 2. You electronic people can just push a button probably and get it. In 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, it says, verse 9, that is, this one who is coming, this Antichrist, this one who is coming in reference to, he's coming to take his seat in the temple, whose coming is in accord with the activity of Satan, with all power, signs, and false wonders. And then we go to, you don't turn there, but when you go to 13, you find out what these signs, this power, signs, and false wonders actually are. One of the false wonders is the resurrection from the dead. Now, how do we know it's a fake resurrection? Because Satan has never been able to give life. Only Jesus Christ can give life. "I am the way, the truth, and the life. No man comes to the Father but by me." Jesus is the life giver, not Satan. And so we look at that and we see that there is something that is happening here. But look at verse 10. "With all the deception of wickedness for those who perish, because they did not receive the love of the truth so as to be saved, Now, notice here that it does not say those who worship the beast or those who take the mark. Why are they going to be judged here? Here it says, because they did not receive the love of the truth so as to be saved. They reject Jesus Christ and they're being judged.
That's the word truth means.
They are rejecting the Lord Jesus Christ. And for that reason that they reject Christ, He is sending a strong delusion so that they will believe what is false, in order that they may all be judged who did not believe the truth. There it is again. He doesn't say they're going to be judged because they took the mark of the beast. The mark of the beast was received because they do not know any better. They're God haters. They can't choose the true God. They can only choose what their mind tells them is to their advantage to choose. The power of good and evil that they were infected with from the garden. That's incredible. So it is to their advantage to receive the mark. Why? Because we will die if we don't. Right? We have to have food. We have to have water. I do not want to die. I will receive the mark. End of debate. They can't. And yet, in order that they may all be judged who do not believe the truth but took pleasure. Isn't that incredible? And you know, even though this next verse doesn't speak to that, I have to go to the next verse. I have to. So excuse me. Michelle, will you read verse 13?
But we should always give thanks to God for you, brethren, beloved by the Lord, because God has chosen you from the beginning for salvation through sanctification by the Spirit and faith in the truth.
Yeah, you know, I didn't want to have to do that because of the word chosen in there. I can't believe Marty actually made me do that. But you know what? It's not Baptist doctrine, for sure. It's not William doctrine. It's not John Calvin doctrine. It is Bible doctrine. God chose. Now look at what it says. God chose you from the beginning of what? The beginning of the world. He chose you from the beginning for what? For salvation. It was decided before you were born. Here it goes. I'm going to say it. Here it goes. It's coming. He decided before the foundations of the earth. Here it goes. Who would be saved? I said it. Now, does that make me a John Calvin lover? Well, John Calvin taught that.
He just believes the same thing you do.
You just happen to agree with him.
I happen to agree with John Calvin on that point.
He believes some of the things.
And he's up there in heaven right now, looking down, smiling. You ever hear that lingo?
Oh, yeah.
John?
Yeah, in all this, is there going to be a rapture?
You know, that reminds me of something. I was teaching a Second Coming class at Roswell Street in Marietta, Georgia once. We had a big group. And I was off on this. I think I was going into la-la land with the details of something. And a friend of mine, just so he could stop me, raised his hand. I said, "Yeah, Bill, what is it?" He said, "Well, I've just got a question. Was John the Baptist really a Baptist?" And I just smiled and I said, "Well, thank you, Bill, for that question." Because what he was doing was, I was losing him so bad. It's like he had been transferred to a wilderness out there and he had no clue what I was talking about anymore, so he stopped me. And I think John just did the same thing. John, there is a rapture before all this happens.
Right.
So what we're dealing with now is everything after the rapture.
Yeah, that's what I didn't understand.
Yeah, that's because I didn't mention it.
Yeah.
But you're absolutely correct. The rapture happens, and then all this other stuff.
Oh, okay.
Okay? You got that?
Yeah, I got that.
Okay, good. But y'all, the false religion of this final form is a very serious thing. It is so serious that it takes up the kings of the earth, and it takes up all earth dwellers. Now, when it says in back to Revelation chapter 17, when it says in verse 2, all the kings of the earth are with the kings of the earth, and then it says, and those who dwell on the earth. Now, it would include those who dwell on the earth, not those who don't dwell on the earth. Are there any of those? No. Just so you'll know that. But it's inclusive of all the earth dwellers whose names are not written in the Lamb's Book of Life. So, we look at this, and we see just how huge it really is. And then verse 8, the beast that you saw was and is not, is about to come and go out of the abyss to go to destruction. And those who dwell on the earth will wander. And then verse 9. Mike, read verse 9.
Here is the mind which has wisdom. The seven heads are seven mountains on which the woman sits.
Okay, now we're given a different picture. This woman started out sitting on many waters. He's transferred in the spirit to the wilderness, and she's riding a beast. And now it says the many waters, or the seven heads, are seven mountains on which the woman sits. And so this again speaks to her authority. It speaks to a worldwide control, and he is going to extrapolate on this a little later. He's still going to skip a further explanation of that, and he's going to get back into the beast, and then he's going to come back to the woman again. So by the time we get to verse 16 and 17, we're going to see that destruction beginning to happen. Because remember now, the goal of this is not necessarily a revealing of how wicked it is, even though it's good to see that. The goal of this is found in verse 1. This angel comes and speaks with him, saying, come here, I shall show you the judgment of the woman who sits on many waters. See that? And so the purpose or the focus is so that we might see the judgment. And I think one of the reasons for that is because if we did not have 17 and 18 and we were left with 13, we would be left with the question, well, what about whatever happened to Satan's kingdom or the kingdom of the Antichrist or to the image or to the false prophet and to this one world or the final form of the world's false religion? Whatever happened to that? Did it just die in the bowl of judgments? And so this is what we see. It is a separate judgment of destruction. We're seeing how it is actually destroyed with the bowl of judgments. And boy, what a destruction it is. In fact, the clarification and the description of the judgment, actually we won't see till 18. But in 17, we see that the Antichrist turns his back on all religions, everybody. And boy, he is stepping up his reign. He is stepping up his power, and he is in control of everyone. Yes, sir.
In verse 3, it says, he carried me away in the spirit into a wilderness. And the scripture reference is to the same wilderness that Israel escaped to. So what does that mean? In chapter 5.
Well, you're drawing a parallel between the wilderness. If they're both referred to as a wilderness.
It's just because there's nothing there?
It's a desolate place. We're not told that that is the wilderness outside Jerusalem where they're told to run. It's just a picture. It's almost like that broad stroke of the brush again. We see that. Then he comes back and clarifies exactly what that wilderness actually means. And so it may have some kind of a parallel with the wilderness in which the Jews are running to where God's going to protect them. And the same wilderness as they're told to flee in Mark chapter 13 when they are to leave, when that abomination of desolation happens, he says, flee, run, drop everything, Don't even go back inside to get part of your clothing. Just leave. Get out of town. Get to the wilderness, because that's the protection God's going to have for you. That wilderness, I don't know whether it's a parallel with this or not. It's just, don't know. So, we're going to have to end there. And the next week we'll look at the verses 10 through 16. And or through 18, and we'll take that a little bit further. And then we'll be ready to get into chapter 18. And chapter 18 is going to take, you know, about a year and a half.
You have been listening to the teaching ministry of Grace Fellowship Church in Bradenton, Florida, with Pastor William Rogers. We invite you to join us in worship every Sunday at 10:30 a.m. We are located at the corner of Manatee Avenue East and East 9th Street on the center floor of the Manatee Central Banquet Hall. We pray that you will join us again next Sunday as we continue to teach God's Word one verse at a time.